Celebrity Interviews Live from the Grotto with Greg Hanna, as Greg could not make it today, as our special sponsor. And our guest today is Parker McKenna. Parker, thanks for stopping by. And you know what? I was a huge fan of my wife and kids, and I appreciate you coming by today.
Thank you so much for having me, and thank you for watching the show.
Absolutely. So let's talk about why music for you. You're still acting, and why music? Was it both at the same time? A lot of times being dual is pretty interesting. Did that come at about the same time?
Yes, honestly, I think I have wanted to be a pop star just as long as I've wanted to be in front of the camera. I've always wanted to be a singer, be enthralled in music some way, somehow. So I'm so happy that I've finally been blessed with the chance.
Absolutely. And that chance and that opportunity. So when did you know you had the talent to do both, to be dual?
Goodness, I think I've known for quite some time. I think the issue has really been finding my sound and becoming comfortable with my voice, because even on the show, even on my wife and kids, I feel like I had such a small, tiny voice. And I think that has worked against me in some ways when it comes to the entertainment business, just because I look a lot older than I may sound. So that also didn't really work in my favor when I was trying to record and figure out what genre of music was going to be meant for my voice. But I think now at this time, I am standing firm in my songs, standing firm in my voice and my sound. I feel like we finally have found it. And I think I've found my lane and I'm more comfortable. But yeah, it's been some time. It's been some time. I think the first time I ever recorded a song, I was about like 15. We're 15 years later, and I finally am releasing music, so I'm super excited.
Yeah, but you had some great success early. Talk about your success in music early. So you got exposed with some really talented people, and now releasing the music again. So tell us that kind of journey.
Yes. So from a young age, I've just been around a lot of entertainers from a very young age. Like, obviously, from my acting background, I started off with my wife and kids, Damon Wayans, Tisha Campbell. But now I'm working with Dennis, and I'm signed to a music group where my label mate is Drew Sidora. I have Just Britney on there with me. I've been blessed to get a few features on this upcoming project. So I'm already working with some legends that are like in my book. They're legends, of course. But yeah, I've just been blessed. Just to work with Dennis is amazing.
And but early in your career, you were singing at 15 too, right? And you had some success and some acknowledgement. That's what I wanted to talk about. And then now coming back to this, yeah.
I had some acknowledgement to the point where people were excited to work with me. They wanted to see what I could do. But I think that I feel like my whole life tried to put me in a box, if that makes sense. And they probably see something for me that I didn't necessarily feel comfortable with, or that I didn't feel like I could sell at that time. So like I stated, I just feel like back then they wanted an R&B sound for me, if that makes sense. And I was fortunate enough to get in the studio with the Underdogs and a lot of awesome producers. And I had a lot of awesome opportunities back then, but I just don't think that sound was going to work for me in the long run. And I'm just having way more fun now with the people that I'm with. And I think you guys will be excited to hear the project as well.
So tell me your music style now. How do you compare that music style?
So my music style now, I say I'm like pop alternative, because we have some different sounds in there. We have some different beats. Of course, I feel like I have so many influences. Like I always say, number one, Britney Spears, down to Mariah Carey, of course, down to Anita Baker. So there's a lot of different inspirations that lie within myself. So I think my project is just a reflection of that. So I say pop alternative. People like to continue to put me in the box because I've dropped my two singles, LA Boogie, Daddy, Atlanta. And they have a pop vibe to it, but they also have some rap undertone. So I think people see me and they automatically want to say, oh, you're a rapper. Nope, this is princess pop music over here and I'm sticking with that genre. So we're going to go with pop alternative. And yeah, I genuinely feel like there's something for everybody on the project. If you want to hear a rap, something more up-tempo, if you want to hear something sad or sulk for a moment, have a little sad girl moment, there's a lot of good vibes on there.
Isn't it great to also tap into your audience, right? Your fans that have, as an actor, that now come back and want to be interested in listening to music, right?
Yes, definitely. It's been very interesting because I feel like I've had to constantly sell other people's projects, if that makes sense. Like I'm promoting other people's films, promoting other people's TV shows. But right now I'm just promoting Parker and I'm just promoting my vibe. And it feels so amazing to share that with everybody because you guys have been introduced to me at such a young age. So it's nice to not only grow with you guys and give you guys a firsthand look in that, but also see you guys grow with me along my journey. Like my fans were not all teenagers anymore from when I was trying to do the music. Then now we're older and we're stepping into a different era. So it's super fun and exciting.
So tell me ultimately what your goal is with your music. What do you want to accomplish in your music career?
Oh my goodness. I still am having pinch me moments every day. Like the fact that I can go on Apple Music and look up my song. So I'm just grateful. I'm taking it day by day and just I'm ready for whatever the world throws at me. The fact that, that I can actually just still go and listen to my own music as I'm waking up every day like, oh my goodness, I'm living my actual dream. So anything that anybody has for me, I really look forward to, of course, getting out on the road and connecting with the fans and hopefully getting new fans, establishing an actual fan base for my music instead of just from my other career. So I'm excited for that, to tap in with others and find people who are interested in the things that I'm interested in and hear the sounds and connect with the music. I'm excited for that and to just get out on the road and perform a song for the first time in my life. It's all a dream. I'm telling you, I'm living in my actual 3-year-old dream. So it's hard to have such high expectations because I'm so grateful for anything.
All right. So my co-host, Greg Hanna, has a question you ask all the celebrities. And this is one that's going to hit you hard and you have to, it really teaches us to learn. Parker, what is the most important thing in life you've ever learned?
Oh my goodness. Let me think. I feel like I'm still learning. I feel like right now, because I think that I've gone through so many different phases and stages in my life. And like I said, I think I'm still in a phase right now and who knows where I'll be next year. But right now, the most important thing that I've learned would be to take time to refill your cup. Us as entertainers, like I said, we're constantly fulfilling other people's projects and just constantly on the move, constantly on the go. But take time to refill your cup and make sure that you are okay within, so that you can present your best self out there to the world. Take time for yourself, refill your cup, pour into yourself just as much as you pour into others. And all will be okay. All will be well, because it starts here and that helps your heart and that helps the outside.
So Parker, best place people can buy your music and stuff, where can they go? What's best place?
Apple Music, of course. I'm a proud Apple Music sponsor myself, of course. There's Spotify streaming on all services for this part. And you guys can check out the music videos on my YouTube and just tap in with me on Instagram. That's always the best place because I'm constantly just giving daily updates, weekly updates, whether they're personal or within my career. So tap in with me there. It's Parker McKenna with 3 A's at the end.
Appreciate it, Parker. Thanks again for stopping by.
Thank you so much. Have a beautiful day.
You're welcome.
Bye.
You're listening and watching the Neil Haley Show. We'll be back in just a moment.
I want to first of all thank Books of Life Marketing. Before we dive into today's exciting interview, I'd like to give a quick shout out to Books of Life Marketing, the team making it all possible. They specialize in helping authors bring their stories to life through expert publishing, marketing, and media exposure. They're behind some of the most inspiring authors' journeys we've seen. If you're an author looking to elevate your book, Books of Life Marketing is the partner you want in your corner. And my guest today is Fred Buss. His book is titled Trends Due to Climate Change: The Effects of Climate, Weather, and Environmental Changes on the Annual Cycle of Life on Flora and Fauna in a Suburban Backyard. Fred, thanks for stopping by. And tell us a little bit about your background before we get right into the book.
Okay. I'm originally from Long Island. I still have my Long Island accent. I went to New York State Maritime College to become a marine engineer. At the time, there were not many maritime offerings. So I joined Ingersoll Rand Company and I was in the pump division. And after some years, I became the chief engineer of the commercial pump division. And I did that for 42 years. I had 42 patents when I had left. And then as I retired, my wife had Alzheimer's. So I became a caregiver for 9 years.
Oh my.
So even though I was doing that, I started this diary of what was happening in my yard, the flora and fauna. And so I've been collecting this diary for over 40 years. And so I was able to be cognizant of what they call climate change and took the data that I had and started to plot temperature and the water and the snow against the years. And it was eye-opening because if I had only taken it for 5 years, I might have gotten an altogether different picture that I'd had with 30 years, which really showed the trend of what's happening.
Absolutely. So I'm looking for this. So Frederick, what inspired you to chronicle 50 years of phenology in a single suburban backyard? And how does this long-term project begin?
It was curiosity, basically curiosity what was happening, just for my own sake. That's what it was. Yeah. And I said it was revolutionary too, but I started to plot and get trend lines of what was happening. One.
That's impressive, because you think about those trend lines now, you can plug all the research you put in, put it into AI, and even explain things even further and dive deeper into people maybe have done this. But I think this is intriguing because you did it yourself. You show that scientific background in a way. You show the ability to really dive deep and take one specific area and show that for such a long-term project. That, again, a lot of people won't put that time into a scientific discovery that you did.
Yes. So one of the most outstanding things, though, that people can understand quite readily is that in the spring, when the leaves start to come out, we call that the canopy on the trees when the leaves come out. And that has increased 2 weeks in advance. Likewise, when the leaves come down in the fall, they're coming down 2 weeks later. So we now have an increase of 4 weeks in the agriculture. So where you and I used to pick tomatoes, maybe in August, now we're picking them into October. And so that gives you some quick idea what's happening.
100%. Your book beautifully merges photography with environmental observation.
Yes.
What do you hope readers will feel and realize as they turn each page?
The anticipation. Otherwise, I have the book now and I start to read it, because I have the book not only month by month, but week by week in a month of what to anticipate of what's going to be happening. So the reader, as he turns the page, will be able to say, I can expect this flower to happen, this bird to migrate, all right? Maybe the young birds are coming. And so the reader can go leave it on his desk and open it up to the month and into the week as what to expect to happen in the yard.
Wow. Okay. You mentioned the goal is to plant in an acquisitive seed in readers. Can you elaborate on what that means and why is it important today?
Once the reader looks through this book and realizes what's been happening, maybe that reader will want to do the same in his or her yard and see what's happening. But not only the reader, but the children of the reader. I hope that the parents will start to instill that same type of thing into young people.
See, I think that's absolutely fascinating, because this is where you add STEM big time, or STEAM, into the classrooms, where you could get kids to want to be involved with their parents and create this. How difficult is this? To be able to chart all of this and develop all this, what would, if someone wanted to try to do what you've done and start this project today, what are things he could do?
It's very simple. Like in my paper, newspaper, we have the temperature each day, all right? Or on your power bill, it has the mean temperature of the month. So a person can very simply just take the mean temperature that's on their power bill and plot that against the year and see how the temperature increases and decreases over the year. The other way of doing it, Cornell has a program called Citizen Watch, Bird Watch. You join that, and from November to April, the person looks at what birds he has and reports it to Cornell. And then at the end of the year, Cornell gives you a report back of what's happening, not only in this area, but almost through the whole country. So it's very simple to start off with.
Sounds like it. Do you believe individual backyard observations like yours can contribute meaningfully to scientific understanding of climate change?
Yes, in the long run, but don't forget I have the 20 years of experience. A person starting out now would have to say, okay, this is ground zero, and start doing it year by year to really be informative of what's happening.
So tell me your take on climate change after doing this study for so long.
In what way? That I found?
What you found, is it such a concern after you've gone through and done this, or should we still be, what can we do? And when you've looked and plotted the points and looked at year by year for so many years, is there a huge concern or not?
Yes, there is. Yes. You know what planting zone is?
No, I don't.
Each state has a planting zone to put in your annuals and perennials. And that planting zone depends on the temperature. So I could not put a plant from South Carolina and put it in Pennsylvania and expect it to live. I have to look at what plants are basically in Pennsylvania. It's called a planting zone. And those zones are changing. We used to have a 5 in Pennsylvania. Now we're starting like at 5.5 and 6. So you shouldn't, if you plant a new tree, you should almost look and say, what's happening in the zone? What tree should I plant for the future 20 or 30 years? Follow me on that?
Yeah. What about the people that say it's cyclical? It just goes through a cycle. You're able to debunk that with your scientific research in a way.
Yes. Yes. As you make the plot and you look at it, it looks like the Rocky Mountains. It just goes up to down, silhouette of the Rocky Mountains. But if I throw a linear trend line, it shows very differently things going up or maybe not changing some plants, but even maybe going down. But basically, the perennial are blooming 2 weeks earlier, all right? So that's what it shows right away. Not all plants, and that can happen because as time goes by, your environment changes. After 50 years, my trees have grown, and so they put shade. There was no shade before, and so that might have an effect on it. But overall, and also the birds are migrating maybe 2 weeks earlier, which is bad because they depend on insects, and a lot of the insects have come and gone by the times the birds migrate. So there's very few insects for them. So that's why I feed the birds all the time.
So why do they say this cyclical thing? Do you see a cycle ever compare or it makes
up
for?
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. That's why I have the long trend. If I just take the cycle for 5 or 10 years, you might debunk the whole thing. Now, the most graphic is the snow in March. Okay. In the 1990s, we were shoveling snow all the time. You might remember that's 20 or 30 inches of snow.
Yeah.
If I plot that 30 inches till now, it's zero in March. Otherwise, we got lately have no snow in March. Now, what has happened is that the temperature in March has gone up 6 degrees, basically. And so you're not going to get snow. So you might get rain, but not snow.
Gee.
That's there.
So you're comparing your data from when to when?
Sometimes it's 30 years, sometimes it's 20 years. So it's the 1990s, sometimes it's 2000 to now. Some cases I have it back to even 1980s.
Have you been able to figure out data from 80 to 50? Any data to compare some of your numbers?
I show some, yes.
And what are you seeing from the 50s to the 80s? Was there a lot of climate change at that time?
The 50s were warmer in the summer and more snow in the winter. If I take the decades, even going back to the 1920s, okay, 1920s to now, decade by decade, the 20s had hotter summers and colder winters. And then that might be 50% of the time. And now you take, now it's only like 10% of the time. It's a regular curve showing the difference what's happening.
So the argument people that say it's cyclical, it's not, they just are choosing to pick certain plot points to make it look cyclical.
Then yeah, and that's like snow. Now and then right now, the snow is not that much. But every once in a while, we'll get a good one. And it might get 20 or 30 inches. And it's a spike, as I call it. You're going along and things are smooth and all of a sudden, bing, goes up high. This phenomena that I see, though, when we get these spikes of 30 inches, the next winter, it's almost zero. And I've had this repeated quite a few times.
So a big outlier type of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And your part of the country compared to another part of the country, do you see, that's where it would be intriguing, right?
Yes, that's very, that's interesting. I've been looking at that. So if I take Las Vegas, okay, and the state of Las Vegas, they have 10 planting zones where Pennsylvania has one, all right? So you got me? They have 10 planting zones in that one state. It's due to all the mountains, all right? And Las Vegas is a man-made area. Wouldn't it be interesting to know what the climate change effect is on a man-made area of Las Vegas?
Yes, it would.
That would be, yeah. And also, the mountains are not having as much snow, so they're not having as much water to go down to Las Vegas. So that state would be a real interesting thing to examine.
So why aren't more people doing something like you as scientists and choosing?
It's phenology is a study of life outside. And there's a regular organization in the states of phenology. Yeah. But I'm doing it just as a lone wolf type situation.
Have you talked to the people that are doing those studies and share your data?
I've approached them a couple of times and I told them about my book, but that's about as far as it's gone.
That's what happens. Scientists say, no, thank you. So you're seeing more of a spike. So it's all in the data, right? And you're looking at long-term data versus short-term data. Or comparing like the 1950s to the 2020s. And that makes no comparison at all versus comparison of a longer-term, longer area. Everyone can put the data together and say, oh, the climate change debate, it's warm and then it's cold again. Yeah. So do you believe in global warming versus global cooling? Because remember,
global warming is a different thing from climate change.
Tell me how that is.
The global warming is just that. It's the global temperature. Climate change is the weather being included in what's happening. Otherwise, if you go to the internet and look up the definition, you'll see global warming and climate change are two different things.
How do you feel the people that debunk climate change altogether?
They're in for a rude awakening.
When do you see that rude awakening based on what numbers you've come up with?
The rude awakening is what's really happening with the whole planet. What I hear about different things. You take the sparrows, the little house sparrows. I used to have 20 or 30 of them. Now I'm down to 2 to 4. is the same as just what's happening to the sparrows. It could be the same as the canary in a mine, like carbon dioxide.
Or even lightning bugs are about to disappear.
Let me finish with the other one. The French, a couple of years ago, did a study of the cell phone waves relative to the number of birds. Isn't that an interesting study?
Yeah.
Obviously, you're not going to put down cell phone waves, but I thought that was a very interesting study that they think that has an effect on the population of the house sparrow.
Yeah. I find this fascinating because, again, now, what do you see things based on your study, Fred? Where should we be concerned moving forward? When does this really cause a lot of problems in our world?
What's happening now is you see all the wildfires.
Yes.
That's devastation. That means that much less exchange of CO2 and oxygen by all those trees burning down massively, okay? But what we as an individual could do is we should be planting native trees and native shrubs, not just because tree pretty or plant is pretty. We should be planting native things. That's the main thing we can
do. I totally am seeing this, man. And it's very intriguing.
I've heard things like, the tilt of the earth is changing. Now that tilt of the earth, that has a huge effect of what's happening in the weather.
So give me 20 years from now, where do you see things? Do you see less animals on this planet? Less?
No, you might see, what you're going to see is a difference in the foliage, okay? Otherwise, farmers have to look in advance on what crops they can plant with the zones changing. Even the maple syrup industry has seen the effect of climate change. That's known. Yeah.
Do you think it's going to be such a horrible effect that's going to cause chaos world unless we start focusing on it more?
Probably, but not here. Maybe it's where the water is, like the South Pacific where the water is rising. But you can read about that in the paper type situation here. But locally, the people have to look at their own environment and what's happening.
So do you like Florida would be one where really they better get their act together?
Yeah. And as I said, even out in Arizona and what they're planting as for wheat and such, that type of wheat is going to be changing. The planting zones are changing.
And we're going to become a global species at one point. And we're going to be species. Other planets, especially with climate change, if it continues to go the route it goes, at one point we're going to run out of our natural resources and we're going to have to go to another planet. What do we say? Do you think that maybe some of these government decisions are made because they are planning on leaving Earth and going to other planets?
I don't want to get into politics.
But it's not a politics question. It's more of a scientific. Politically, that's not a political move by us going. Because remember, a lot of privatized space companies. I'm just seeing that as maybe who cares? Then there's going to be resources somewhere else. And will there be other life in other planets? You see, you got to keep living, never die, Fred, to see this time.
Yeah, it's a long ways off, I hope.
Okay. Yeah, because you are seeing, but keeping your brain going is the reason to keep living.
Yep.
It's exciting studies. I'm intrigued by this book because you're giving a different perspective. Do you think you are? Because you're giving numbers, not a bunch of words or research. It's your own research.
Yeah, people can take this data and interpret it the way they want.
But you at least show this data, and then you're giving, in your book, you're giving specific reasons to be concerned.
Yes.
So concerned is we don't have as many planting, we're not going to have as many crops, correct?
I'll have a different type of crop. You'll have a different type of crop. And as the same thing, as you probably know, is happening in the ocean. The lobsters are no longer in New England anymore. They're moving up north further toward Canada. The sharks are moving up the East Coast in the summer. They want the warmth. So it's not just the good earth, it's also the ocean too.
And I think that the big thing you're going to try to do in your argument, and this is where I'm taking it in a different direction, you get it, because I'm knowledgeable in this area. I've had major experts on both sides. And giving me another side that you have no political agenda. You're just looking at saving our planet.
And I hope so.
And that's why you've written the book. Visual storytelling in this book is powerful. How do you decide which movements capture over the years and how that they evolve?
I said that the people have to get involved as far as what they're planting and know what's happening. And they aren't. They are not.
And I think educating them through this book will definitely do that, Fred. And that's the key. That's the key powerful thing.
Yeah.
And what do you think? This is a book that's been written for 30 years. How do you feel about that? Finally, the book's out. How does that make you feel?
When I first drafted the book, it was 1,100 pages.
Gosh.
No one would touch it, right? So I whittled it down to now it's about 480 pages.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's a good start. Okay. So is there a book two out of this then, if it's only 400?
Yes, there's a book two. I have one which just says what's happening, the lifestyle of backyard birds due to climate change. It's just about the birds and what's happened to climate change. Because not everyone's interested in all the flowers and people are, a lot of people.
Birds are something that intrigues you, it sounds like, Fred.
Oh, yes, yeah. But interesting, over the period of time, over my little house here, I had 79 species I recorded going over a period of time. 79 species.
Oh, my goodness.
And in that period, I lost 12, but I gained 12. Otherwise, just due to climate change, some birds don't come here anymore. They don't come down as far south. And I'm gaining birds which are in the south are now coming up here.
That's wild.
Yeah.
It definitely is. And an intriguing what you're able to do, Fred. That's the thing of this and birds. So do you ever write a book just on birds alone?
No, that's what the second book is about. It's about birds alone. And it's not just say, this is a bird, this is the color. No, I tell the story about each bird and what I have and what they do, what intriguing things the birds do that most people don't even realize.
All right. And is there more books in the works for you after that? That book doesn't come out yet, right? This is the first one.
No, the other book just came out about a month ago. I have a book about Alzheimer's for 9 years. I was a caregiver and I gave it from a man's standpoint, okay, about caregiving for Alzheimer's, which was quite a journey in itself. And I have a fourth book coming out, and that's about my wife and I, our experience as naive couple moving out to the country and what experiences we endured there for 9 years.
Oh, you got a lot of books in the works.
I have four books in the works, yeah.
So do you enjoy writing?
I've come to the end. Yes, I did enjoy it. It was fun writing the books, yeah.
You're no more books for you after that?
You never know what, there might be in the future. I don't know. But right now I have to sit back and say, okay.
And going through the process, tell authors that want to start writing how much of a challenge is to write.
Quite a bit. I was very fortunate to have some friends who did the editing because my English as an engineer was not the best and my grammar is not the best. So I have these wonderful people who have helped me out very much at that point.
And what do you love most about writing?
To be able to pass experiences and information to people who might not know about these things. A lot of people say, oh, yes, we know about this. But I say, do you really? And my experiences, likewise, I go back many years where I tell people about things. They'll say, what? When we lived in a country, we had party lines. And we didn't have postmen. It was altogether different experience. When you tell people about that, they look at you. They say, what type of situation? But it was a wonderful experience and wonderful people.
I think that that's the thing. If you enjoy something that you love doing, keep writing. And after the four books, it's time to keep writing. That's the fun thing about doing something creative that you enjoy and you're trying to pass down that information. And that's I've learned some stuff now that to look into it deeper. But I think what you should do, challenge yourself, Fred, is tell people, you know what? This is what I'm going to challenge you about climate change. I want you to go and read my book, then read the opposition's book and see which one really true has true research and what's true, like versus hearsay or opinion. Because we all have opinions, but the data does not lie. At the end of the day, data speaks volumes, and we're not putting the data and the research into anything anymore, are we?
No.
And having that point and that counterpoint. And are you done with that? Are you still recording those? Are you going to continue to record?
I'm still recording it down every day, yes.
And this year seems very hot now, and it goes from hot to cool. Yeah. We can't really tell when we're ready for the next season to change. And that's climate change, and it's general, right?
That is right.
It's going to be hotter than hot in September, and then one day later, we're going to have snow.
Yes.
Depending on what part of the country we're in.
That's the clue right there. What part of the country? Yeah.
So why do you see climate change different in parts of the country? What is that reason that you see certain places that don't show those dramatic changes as much?
There might be areas. I'm not familiar with all the areas, but I'm sure we're all aware of what's happening in the Midwest and West this year with all the storms and flooding. Yeah. Yeah. That's all part of this changing weather.
Got it. Okay. Best place people can go purchase your books. Where can they go, Fred?
Amazon.
Okay.
Barnes & Noble.
Okay.
If you go to my website, fredjuice.com, you'll see the list of books there.
All right. We appreciate it, Fred. Great conversation. Enjoyed the convo and best of luck to you.
Thank you. I enjoyed talking to you. Very good.
I did too. You're listening and watching The Neil Haley Show, and we'll be back in just a moment. Before we dive into today's exciting interview, I'd like to give a quick shout out to Books to Life Marketing, the team making it all possible.
They specialize in helping authors bring their stories to life through expert publishing, marketing, media exposure. They're behind some of the most inspiring author journeys we've seen. If you're an author looking to elevate your book, Books to Life Marketing is the partner you want in your corner. And our guest today is Sue Buzzio. Sue, thanks for stopping by. And before we get started, I wanted to talk about you're the author of Hair Today, Gone Tomorrow. I wanted to dive a little bit deep into specifically your background. At the time of writing this book, Sue was coming out of her fourth marriage to someone who had a drinking problem and was being violent towards her. She had no intention of getting involved with anyone at that time, let alone consider marriage. Then she met Mark, who fell in love with her instantly. For Sue, marriage was the last thing on her mind, but Mark did not give up. So I'm excited you're coming by to tell the story. How are you, Sue?
I'm fine, thank you. And thank you for inviting me onto your show.
All right. So what made you sit down one day and start writing this book?
So I wrote it in 2008 and my cancer journey started in 2004. So I think I just wanted to help educate people who are maybe going on that journey themselves or who perhaps have a family member or a friend who is going through cancer, because it is such a tough path to navigate. There were so many things that I didn't know when I first was diagnosed with cancer. The language that was being used, loads of words that I didn't understand, the process, the procedures that were involved. And I just wanted to share that with whoever wanted to buy my book and just help them along and educate them a little bit in terms of cancer and what that means. It is not a death sentence when you get diagnosed with cancer. And I wanted to share that with people, that there is life after an initial diagnosis.
Absolutely. And that's true, because a lot of people have been able to overcome cancer. What emotions did you feel when you had this diagnosis?
Shocked, absolutely shocked. There'd been nobody in my family that had cancer, so it came out of the blue. When I first found the lump in my breast, I had breast cancer. It was so tiny. It was the size of a pea. So it's like, how can something so small be so drastic? So I was shocked, upset. My husband was obviously upset. We weren't married when we got the diagnosis, but we married, I think, about 4 months after that. But I wasn't angry. I didn't get angry with God. It was just, okay, so we're now on this path and let's see how we navigate this.
Totally, 100%. Because we have to, when tough things happen, we have to gear up and say, okay, this is what's happening to us, but we can't give up. We have to move forward, regardless of where we are and what's the most difficult situation. Because giving up is just not an option for you, is it?
For me, absolutely not. And that's not to say I didn't have bad days. A couple of, I don't know whether, but my cancer journey didn't stop. It came back in 2019. So I am now stage 4 cancer, which is not curable. It's only treatable. And only a week ago, I was sobbing with my husband saying, I'm on my 72nd round of chemotherapy and I don't know how I can keep going and I might have to stop. Kind of the look on his face when I said, I might have to stop because I can't do it anymore. And then I thought, no, I got to keep going.
Oh my, I'm so sorry. How do you arrive at the title, Hair Today, Gone Tomorrow?
Yes, I'm a bit of a cheeky chappy. So I didn't want to have a title dying with cancer, that's not who I am. And obviously I lost my hair when I went through chemotherapy. Cancer didn't take my hair, I took it. Cancer was not going to take my hair. So I gave my husband the clippers and I said, shave it. So before I started my treatment, I was absolutely determined. Cancer, you're not having, this is my round and I'm going to take my hair. So it was a really sensitive topic for many ladies. It is about their identity. You have a good hair day and you have a bad hair day. So I think it's really important for women to know that once your hair's gone, everything's gone okay, it'll come back and you'll get your hair again. So I've got my hair again, and this type of cancer, I haven't lost my hair with it, but I've been prepared to lose it. So it's just a really emotional subject, I think. But I do think that society is getting better at how we treat people who don't necessarily look the same as us. And I think that's really important, to be kind to a lady who's maybe walking around with a bald head. Chances are she's going through chemotherapy, and just giving her a smile and a nod, I know what you're going through, just I'm hoping would help her on that day.
Absolutely. It's something where you have to have that hope even through what you're going. And I definitely have seen some amazing stories of people even overcoming stage 4 cancer. So did not give up, especially what I'm seeing some of these alternative things that people are doing in the United States. It's unreal.
Yeah.
So I would look at every option possible before saying, okay, listening to what the doctors say. You do not. You keep fighting. That's for sure.
I will. Sorry, I don't mean to interrupt you, but I do feel very strongly that I'm going to be healed. We are praying in my church and other churches in the States, in Canada, in Nigeria. I have a whole group of people praying, and I just believe that God has the power to heal today as much as he did when he walked on the earth. So I'm waiting for that healing.
All right. I will definitely contact your team, because I really do have some contacts in the United States that have found some alternatives that have been unbelievable for beating cancer.
Thank
you. You share a number of stories in the book about other people's reactions to having no hair. Can you give our listeners a few examples?
Yeah, I think the hardest example was when I came out of the hospital after a treatment, and as you come out the hospital, there's a pedestrian crossing. And so we stopped. We had to stop. It's a red light. And there were kids that were walking across the pedestrian crossing, and they were about 14 or 15. And one of them spotted me in the car, and I just had a bald head. I wasn't wearing a scarf or a hat or anything. And he just pointed at me and burst out laughing and told all his friends, and they were turning around, looking at me. And I was like, I couldn't say to my husband, step on it, let's get out of here. I had to sit there while they laughed at me. So that was really hard, but I had fun with it as well. We were getting pestered day after day just before Halloween by some kids. Will you give us some money? Have you got any sweeties? And I was like, no, come back on Halloween. They kept coming. So I think it was probably about 2 days before Halloween. And I thought, I'm going to have some fun with this. So I switched all the lights off, and they knocked on the door, and I just opened the door, and they went, and they just ran. And we had no kids coming on Halloween. Nobody wanted any sweeties from me anymore. Yeah. So fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Because you have to laugh about things that even are very painful.
Oh, sure.
Exactly. Absolutely. You were first diagnosed with cancer in 2004, which you mentioned before.
Yeah.
And you talked about you're not cancer-free today. And that's hard. I think when you wrote the book, did you know that you weren't going to be cancer-free? Is that one of the motivations to write it?
No. When I wrote the book, I was still in treatment. It didn't finish until 2010. And when treatment finished, we met with someone who said, there are 5 places that your cancer can come back in: the breast, the bones, the liver, the lungs, and the brain. And we've written it all down for you. And I'm thinking, what do you want me to do with this? You could pop it on your fridge. No way am I putting it on my fridge. So I tore it up, put it in the bin, and it was just important for Mark and I to start living life again without cancer, without hospitals, without appointments. Did I know it was a possibility it could come back? Yes. But when it came back, I was in hospital for something completely different. I had pancreatitis, and I had it 3 times. And trust me, it's not pleasant. It's really painful. And I'd gone for a scan, and I guess they were checking to see if there was anything untoward in my pancreas. And this suddenly, a whole team of white coats came round my bed. Mark was visiting at the time. And this lovely lady stuck out her hand and she said, can I introduce myself? I'm a breast consultant. And I said, oh, I said, I'm not breast, I'm pancreas. I don't know who else here is breast, but it's not me. And she just smiled kindly. And she said, no, it is you I want to speak to. She said, we did the T-scan on your pancreas, and the radiologist, whilst he wouldn't necessarily have been looking anywhere else, spotted that you have lesions in your spine. I'm sorry to tell you that your breast cancer has metastasized to your bones. So currently, it's all over my spine, both my hips, my left leg, both my ribs, and it's moved into my lungs now, to my sacrum. It's everywhere. A great position to be in. But yeah, it's back, but I'm fighting back.
So basically, they said, why do they feel when it's stage 4 that there's no way to recover, the doctors and stuff, and you just keep going? Go ahead.
Because when it's stage 4, it's not curable. So that's the definition of being at stage 4. It's not curable, but we can treat you. And so we'll treat you for as long as you can tolerate it. We will treat you for the pain that obviously cancer brings with it, and especially when it's in your bones.
but we can never cure you. And that's the position that the medics have. That's the stance that they have. So yeah, when they told us, Mark and I were just totally shocked. And after Mark had left from visiting, I just cried. And at 4 o'clock in the morning, they phoned Mark and said, can you come back in? Your wife is inconsolable. And it was just the thought of, A, it's bad. And B, I have to tell my family all over again that we're facing this. I have to go and tell my mom, who's now, she was approaching her 90s. And that's the hardest thing ever, because as soon as you knock on the door, you're going to change their world forever. Because as soon as you're in the house, you're giving them the news, it's bad. And it's stage 4. Yeah, tough.
Yeah, absolutely. And what if you've reached out to the cancer community? Tell me that process and how some people are still giving you more hope than you, than the doctors are. Because that's the big thing. We decide in so many ways. Are we going to give up and listen to what the doctors say? Or are we going to go and try every alternative method or idea or different thing that they can do, you can do?
Yeah, I think we are so much more as a society open to not necessarily just going down the traditional forms of treatment. And I think that's great. When I first got diagnosed with secondary bone metastases, I'd never come across the word secondary metastases. And I'm like, what does this mean? I don't understand this language. And I knew that there would be other people in my situation. So I set up a group on Facebook, and I've got just about 700 followers. But it just means that we can come together as a community, and people who have just been diagnosed, or maybe their husbands have been diagnosed, they come onto the forum and they're asking questions and sharing different types of cancer treatments that they're doing. So it's just a safe place for people to be able to come and ask those questions that maybe they won't want to ask their oncologist, or they don't want to ask their family members. So that's been great to be able to see that start from 1, 2, 3 people. And now we've got nearly 700 people all across the world. And there are some hard stories. There was a lady from the Philippines who contacted me, and she said, can you help me? I can't afford my mother's chemotherapy, and she's going to die without it. And that was, I felt awful. But obviously, I can't be sending money to everybody who's in that situation. But we were able to talk. And we did. And I hope that had given us some comfort. But yeah, it's a great community. I get a lot from it. And I hope other people have got a lot from it as well.
Absolutely. And that's important. And building this community, getting to talk to people is so important. And what do you think people are going to learn most from about your book? What's your hope?
That a cancer diagnosis is not a sentence. There is life after cancer. And I think my approach to cancer was having a positive mental attitude. I think I am living to live. I'm not living to die. I'm living to live. And I remember I was in a cancer group, and this lady was sharing with us that her husband wanted to buy her a winter coat, and it was in a summer sale. And she was furious with him. And I said, excuse me. I said, can I just ask why you're so cross? And she said, I could be dead. And I went, yeah, but you could still be alive. And it's don't live to die. Live to live. Make friends. Go on holiday. I've been all over America. I've been to Canada 3 times. We've just been down the Blue Danube, and that was beautiful. And I'm planning my next trip, which might be to San Diego. I'm not sure, but I'm living to live. I'm not planning to die. And I just think that makes a huge difference mentally in how you approach each day.
You committed to donate some of your royalties to cancer charities as your way of raising money for cancer research. Have you done anything else to help others diagnosed with breast cancer?
Yes. My husband wasn't too thrilled. So I signed us up to do a moonwalk, and kind of the clue's in the title, but I didn't get it. We're starting when the moon is out. It's like, can I stay up that late? I'm normally in bed by about 6:30. I didn't do any training. I took 3 Mars bars and a bottle of morphine, and I thought, that'll get me through. I got to 23 miles and I collapsed, and I was taken by ambulance to the hospital. And the doctors were furious with me for doing it. I'd only just finished my chemo treatment. And then 4 years later, I wanted to raise money, because even though I didn't finish, people kindly paid the sponsorship. So I did it again. And I told my husband, sweetheart, we're walking another 26 miles. Because I'm a completer finisher. It's not in my nature. I stopped at 23 miles. I need to make it to 26 miles. So we walked again. I did my 26 miles. I got my sponsorship money to raise money for cancer charities. And I collapsed at 26 miles and got taken to hospital. But I finished this time. So yes, no more walking for me, no more sponsorships for me. So I thought, if I write a book, then whatever I get in royalties, I can give to breast cancer or cancer research.
Wonderful. I think that's tremendous. And you're here to other people because you're truly thinking of others, even in the most challenging part of your life. When you get to talk to other people that were diagnosed with cancer and are fighting cancer, how many of them do you see with your attitude versus some that just don't have that attitude? And you feel bad because that's going to be the quicker way for them for cancer to beat them.
Sadly, there are a lot of people who I've met who have just thought, this is it, and have resigned themselves to die. But I have met a lovely group. We call ourselves the Living Well group instead of the About to Die group. So we're the Living Well group, and we all try and have a positive attitude. That doesn't mean to say that we're not realistic. Part of our conversations, our discussions are, have we made a will? Have we sorted out where we want to be buried? Have we left instructions for spouses? It doesn't mean you can't do any of that. And I've done that. I've got my burial plot. I've even lain in my burial plot because usually when you're alive, you don't get to try it out. Tried it out and I lay down and this is where I'm going to get buried. So it doesn't mean to say that you can't do things like that that are sensible to do for your family, preparing them. But just keep yourself focused on living and what else you can continue to give to society, to your family, to other people. And it's been great to meet like-minded people.
Absolutely. It sounds like it. It's definitely an amazing thing that you're talking about, to meet these people and live your life. Because ultimately, at the end of the day, we don't live enough. We don't have a purpose. Lots of people just don't have purpose. And sometimes cancer brings that purpose, which is a weird thing, right? You think about that, right? You have a purpose now. Every morning to wake up and be happy to be alive. And you feel for people that are going through so much heartache that don't have this diagnosis.
Yeah.
Do not know when they know it's coming, their day.
Yeah.
And what do you say to people like that?
I guess it depends what their background is. It depends what it is that has brought them to this particular point where they are negative in their mindset. The only thing that I can do is try and live by example, is to try and help them if they're speaking to me and they understand my position and what I'm going through. Yeah, lots of people say, are you not afraid of dying? The one thing that we can be guaranteed of is that after we're born, we're going to die at some point. And nobody knows when that is. Nobody's got their death date. Our death date are not on our scans, on our scan reports. None of us know.
That someday it's going to happen soon. Could you imagine what that would mean for people when technology hits that? There's a movie. There was a movie out like that, a few movies, and it's your death date. That's science fiction. But I think that would make people different about life. We need the biggest scare in the world. And Sue, I think that you talk about, how surprised you were. Our healthcare system really needs to look at things further about early detection of cancer, early detection for people to see the importance of healthcare and to understand that we don't wait till we get the scare to happen, that we look at things earlier. And I hope that we do. Yep. In the United States, they're trying to transform healthcare and change the way it is. And I'm sure in the UK, the same thing. You want a change of how healthcare. So you have this platform. How would you change healthcare to make sure that we can eliminate cancer or make cancer less prevalent?
Wow, it's a big question. I don't know whether you know that in the UK, the NHS, our National Health Service, is on its knees at the moment. We don't have enough funding. The waiting lists are enormous.
Oh, no.
Thankfully, for cancer, we are lucky in the sense that when you are referred by your general practitioner to the hospital, they have 10 days to see you, and they do see you within those 10 days more often than not. There are so many tests that are taking place. There are so many trials that are taking place. There is going to be a day when we get it and we can fix cancer. It's happened for other illnesses. It will happen for cancer.
We have AI now. I'm telling you, that's another thing I would tell you is if you have ChatGPT, they just launched ChatGPT 5 or throughout the world. This is my tip for you. Go in there and talk. Talk to your talk. There's a voice one. And if you're going to invest in anything, invest in AI to figure this out. And then take that to your healthcare professionals, because they're going to look at the alternatives that are out there. And they're going to, and you're going to have the greatest research in the world to find some research person that wants to keep you living. And that's the problem we run into. But it looks like you will do anything possible to make sure that.
Sorry, that was rude. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but no, I think that our healthcare professionals, sometimes they're resistant. If I walked into my oncologist and said, I've done this chemo for 72 cycles and I'm done with it and I want to try something different, I don't know how open they would be. I know people who've done that and they've been shut down.
Oh, that's where, that's called doctor gaslighting. Doctor gaslighting. Yeah. And it's awful. I have one of my doctor clients that says, I don't like it. I've had it too, where I go, oh no, that's that specialist, that specialist. So I just went through AI. And honestly, you should look at what Sam Altman said. Sam Altman said basically ChatGPT 5.0 is going to be one of the best healthcare consults in the world with the types of knowledge and ability that he has. He says it's scary. He calls it like the Manhattan Project. So I'm waiting to dive deeper to see where that is. But what I'm saying for you, I've done it in law. I've done it with my health. Go in there and spend that journey. And I know people already that I'm working with that have used alternatives to become cancer.
Yep. So, I was on the phone with a lady 2 months ago. She was stage four. She's now cancer free. I'm reading a book at the moment called How to Starve Cancer Without Starving Yourself. Mm-hmm. And this lady just rejected the traditional ways of treating cancer. And she did it herself by diet and a whole bunch of other things. It wasn't just Absolutely. What she ate. More complex than that. But yeah, there is so much more out there than just the traditional medicine.
All right. But I would use the research that you have at your fingertips.
Yeah.
And just get the 40-pound version of ChatGPT so you don't get a limit, or whatever limit you spend it. Trust me. Oh my goodness. It would be something that I absolutely will send your PR team all this information. But where can people go and purchase the book? Where can they go?
You can get it online. So you can get a Kindle version and you can get it online. Amazon, Barnes & Noble. Don't know whether you have that over here. Waterstones, Blackwells, etc. So just have a look around on the internet. I am looking, as a result of speaking with Books for Life, I am looking to republish. Great. So my book is out at the moment, takes us up to getting through my first journey with cancer. And I am typing as fast as I can. Actually, I'm dictating it. So that's a bit of a lie. Didn't mean to lie. But I'm now writing what happened from 2019 when I got diagnosed with stage four.
Fantastic.
And in the process at the moment. So
good.
Book should be out. Hopefully.
I think your journey is going to be amazing if you do the research, but I appreciate it, Sue. Thanks for stopping by. All right. You're listening and watching the Neil Haley Show. And we'll be back in just a moment. Show on the No Sleep Nation podcast with our host, Jason Seal. Jason, how are you? And we're gearing up closer and closer to the big event, the launch. September's going to be right after Labor Day. Everything's going to start picking up like crazy, isn't it?
I can't wait.
And you already saw, as I'll keep saying, because I'm in Mentor, Ohio, near Cleveland, look at Shador start. He did pretty well, but I heard he's going to sit the bench after that.
And he's hurt. I don't know. I want to get the Steelers rolling and see what Aaron Rodgers does and see what the defense does.
Yeah, did Aaron play well or not? Or he didn't even play that game?
What's that?
Did he play the first preseason game?
He didn't watch.
I didn't watch either. So that's it. I end up hearing about Shador because everyone's saying, Shador. So we'll see what happens. So basically, all the shirts are ready to go. Update us with what's happening with No Sleeve.
So getting ready to roll out I got some new designs and logos I'm going to try out. I'm wondering if we get them printed or if we figure out a way to put them in front of everybody on the live stream. Maybe we can get some feedback, post them up on the page, and then let people vote, see what they like, what they don't like. I like doing that. I'm excited to start getting more fan pictures once the orders start going out again. I got one already from our girl at Rise and Thrive. That was awesome feedback. She said she loved the fit. After having kids, it fit good, and she's positive in it. It was awesome. So she loved it. So I'm looking forward to her spreading the word in Pittsburgh, but I've got a lot of work to do. We're close with the website. We'll get it up and running here shortly and get some new designs out, man. People are excited. They're ready. They're ready, man.
We're ready. And that's what you're hearing, ready. And then that's going to the gyms, going everywhere.
Yes.
No Sleeve Nation.
Yes.
And I think No Sleeves, like, show your design of your shirt you're wearing right now.
So this was one of my favorite ones that I made, that I came up with, because I did not find it on the internet prior. And that's Back to the Future style, where we're going, we don't need sleeves. It's so good. It's my favorite. There's No Sleeves Till Brooklyn and all the other ones, Sleeveless in Seattle. But this one is just, I love it. And it, my guy killed the design on it, made it perfect. So this is definitely one.
Exactly. And so I'm trying to get you some Vance refrigeration shirts. If you guys are fans of The Office talking, I talked again to the who played Bob Vance, and that would be pretty cool because everyone would want to wear those. So you never know what's happening in the No Sleeve Nation.
We're grow it. We're growing it.
We're growing it. Oh, yeah. Worldwide, anyone that wants customized shirts. And are you finding out that a lot of people aren't satisfied when you talk to them about other people that customize shirts?
I was going to say, one of the biggest things I'm running into is a lot of your shirt companies that print them for all the companies throughout the Pittsburgh and here and there. A lot of times they just want people say, hey, I want a cheap shirt because my budget is this, but it's, you want to get them a, something with good quality fabric, like a 50-50 poly cotton or a 60-40 poly cotton, which most of my shirts are 60-40 poly cottons, not 100% cotton. So these don't shrink. They don't, my shirt, this shirt is 10 years old. It's still hanging in there. I've washed it 1,000 times. And the color of the shirt, the black, has actually faded before the graphic, the logos. So that's something, and people have given me that feedback over the years that they're still wearing them. And
so a lot of people get these custom shirts, they're done. They're finished after a short period of time.
Yeah, you get one or two. Anything I buy in the Strip District, you know, those Pittsburgh Yinzer shirts down there, 100% cotton, $5 shirts, and you get a couple washes out of them and the thing's gone. And they just come.
You should look at those designs that are there and then go and set up there one weekend and somewhere near there.
Look into that. And plus there's the, I think they have the, not market, but I believe there is a flea market, but type of indoor seller thing with vendors. You have to look into that down in the Strip too.
Yeah, but there's everywhere that you can go, but you just go to nosleevenation.com and purchase the shirt. Now, let's talk the excitement of the fans on the social media. What do you want to think about starting to put out those shorts and the response you're getting?
I like the shorts. I think they're great. People, it's just keeping in touch with everyone. And I think they like that. And it's just showing once we get this up and running and we start doing some cool videos where we're throwing out stuff from events and just custom videos. I was telling you before, I want to get a nice video of me actually cutting and stitching so people can see the handmade, the love that goes into the shirts. So I'm looking forward to that.
So tell me a little bit about how you do this. First, the shirt comes in. What do you do to make sure it's no sleeves?
So the shirts come in as t-shirts, regular t-shirts. So this way I see what the orders are, or I see what I'm low in and I can take them, and I get them either folded in half, or, and then I can run. I have a cutter that I can run on it and just, I line it up by eye, and I've done a lot of these, so I have some practice. And then once I have the sides cut, it looks good, it's symmetrical, then I can get it on the serge machine and I run it through there, puts a nice little, cleans up the edge, puts a stitch on it. So it's not just me cutting shirts with scissors and mailing them out.
That's awesome. So then go and do that. And then voila, there's the shirt.
There's the shirt.
Exactly. So you basically get the t-shirt and the screen prints done by your team, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And if they want screen print designs, what is the best way to make sure you have the best logo for your company?
Well, a lot of times some of the people that want shirts printed will just send me whatever logos, designs they have, or if they need me to come up with something or help them with something, I've done that. Just takes a little bit more time. You have the back and forths and all that. And once I have that, I can put a mock-up together, front and back. This is what it looks like. And I'm going to give a shout out right now to Coach Corey. I'm doing shirts for her fast pitch school. She was a softball player at Pitt. Now she teaches softball mechanics on the side, and I'm doing shirts for her. So I'm excited. She sent me everything over today. They're going to be tie-dyed. So we can do all kinds of different things. And I'm looking forward to a place on the page on the No Sleeve Nation site where we can put up some of the customers we have and what we've done for them. So then other people that want to try us out will have something to go off of.
And do you think a lot of people, like you said, every creator needs their own shirt? Every creator. So that, and that's the cool thing, is that you find out and figure out a design and go, because you want your fans, and the merchandise opportunities are endless.
There's a lot. Yeah. We can help with all kinds of shirts, different designs. And now with AI, that's helping too. We can do things we couldn't really do before. So I'm looking forward to that.
Hey, there's so many things. And I was forgetting, I was talking about the importance of merchandise.
especially if you're a creator or some sort of person. If you don't have your own shirt, you've not made it yet.
Hawk to a girl sold like $250,000 in shirts and merchandise her first month.
Exactly. So is New Sleeve Nation thinking of doing other merch? Are you going back to t-shirts, or did you do t-shirts before, or was it only no sleeves before?
Both. Yeah. So anybody that needs shirts done, any kind of shirt or any kind of sleeveless, we can help out with that for sure.
How many of you are seeing more like sleeveless better than regular shirts?
If it's for a business or a nonprofit, not as many sleeveless as I'd like, but some people I have done a few events where they needed sleeveless shirts for a, oh, what was the one? It was a